don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. I've got one today. I've been looking around for some really fun kind of diving into the concept of property titles and how you can have quote-unquote smart property or property that is somehow or at least in part digitally secured, and one that fully addressed or at least openly talked about the fact that, you know, you're still dealing with a lot of what's it referred to as wet software, I guess you could say, where humans have to be involved because the physical world enforcement is, you know, the major piece of the puzzle. Like, you can't, just because you have a digital token for a house doesn't mean that you can get into your house or that somebody hasn't come with a gun and taken it from you, kind of thing. So, and sure enough, in my search, I hadn't found anything that I was really enjoying or thought was really thought-provoking. But what do you know, Nick Szabo has one titled Secure Property Titles with Owner Authority. Now, keep in mind, this one dates all the way back to 1998, so this is in a world long before Bitcoin existed, and this is just kind of the concept at a high level of, you know, how is this even possible, and how might it come about? So, I hope you can bear with me today. Luckily, I have the benefit of editing, so this might not really be a problem, but I have just got the worst freaking headache today. And it has made this one a little bit difficult to get out, and hopefully it won't be too much longer before I get to publish it, but it'll probably be later in the day. This article, by the way, or essay, is on NakamotoInstitute.org. They have a ton of Szabo's work, and honestly, they're a really great resource. I constantly have some tab open with the Nakamoto Institute, just because they cover so much of the stuff that goes back into the 90s about, you know, how the thinking around even some of these concepts started. They are a wonderful resource. If you do not use them to dig into this, you are a sad person, and you should definitely do so. And I'm sure you can get Nick Szabo's works in 100 other places, but this one's just got a really good... it's just easy to go through the whole list and be like, oh, there's Nick Szabo, and there's a topic that I've been looking for. Let me dig into it. So, all right, without further ado, this is a really long intro. Let's go ahead and hit Nick Szabo's Secure Property Titles with Owner Authority. The advent of writing greatly improved the tracking of property rights, and indeed gave rise to our modern systems of property rights and law. However, written records have proven to be quite vulnerable to abuse, a common pattern during eras of political instability or oppression has been the confiscation of land via forgery or destruction of public records. Reconstruction from informal records, such as residency recorded in phone books, even when possible, is costly and fraught with error and potential for fraud. Large amounts of, in some areas most, property in developing countries is not formally titled. Even during eras of political stability in developed countries, there occur many expensive problems with titles. Straightforward transcription of written records into a centralized online repository would make many of these problems even worse. Electronic records can be highly vulnerable to loss and forgery, and insiders are the most common source of such attacks. This paper proposes a secure, distributed title database to prevent such attacks against property rights in the future. Many kinds of internet resources have a basic characteristic. users must agree on their control across trust boundaries. A big example is names. The article, Names, Decentralized, Secure, Human Meaningful, Choose 2, dismisses not only the ubiquity and importance of this problem, but also the possibility of solution. Instead, pet names are proposed. These are at best mere mnemonics to translate human-readable into cryptographic names. Pet names don't do anything to secure naming across trust boundaries. All three attributes, decentralized, secure, and human meaningful, must be provided if people are to communicate and be communicated about securely over the internet. And this paper, along with the article, Advances in Distributed Security, shows how to provide all three. More generally, we show how to implement transferable global rights enforced entirely by protocol to names, attributions, BitGold, and similar purely informatic property owned by a particular entity, but possessed and relied upon by the public, and how to implement a secure title database for other kinds of property. For a particular example of cross-trust boundary rights enforced entirely by protocol, see my proposal for name integrity in cross-trust boundary file systems. In all cases of property rights, there's a defined space, whether a namespace or physical space, and the task is to agree on simple attributes of or rights to control subdivisions of that space. In some cases, a name or other symbol corresponds to a person or object owned or controlled by that person. For example, internet users must agree on which domain name corresponds to which website operator. In other cases, we are simply concerned with control over a subdivision of the space. With real estate, we must agree on who owns various rights, to occupy the surface, to mine the minerals underneath, etc., to a piece of land. With radio spectrum, we must agree on who owns what range of frequencies and in what physical space, or transmitting power as an easily observed approximation of physical space used. It is the author's hypothesis that all such agreements of control, including control over the semantics of symbols, to be made and respected across trust boundaries, are problems of agreeing on and maintaining property rights. Thus, the results of this paper are far more general than they might first appear. I believe this paper provides a solution to secure namespaces and similar problems, as well as the problem of securely recording agreements on traditional property rights. Highlighting the property rights nature of public directories also highlights the limitations of these mappings. For example, that names, addresses, and other symbols whose semantics are controlled by a person can often be delegated, just as property can be given or rented. New advances in replicated database technology will give us the ability to securely maintain and transfer ownership for a wide variety of kinds of property, including not only land, but chattels, securities, names, and addresses. This technology will give us public records which can, quote, survive a nuclear war, along the lines of the original design goal of the internet. While thugs can still take physical property by force, the continued existence of correct ownership records will remain a thorn in the side of usurping claimants. I use political words in this essay as metaphors to describe how our hypothetical property title software, and especially its protocol for distributing the title database across a public network, could work. A group called a property club gets together on the internet and decides to keep track of the ownership of some kind of property. The property is represented by titles, names referring to the property, and the public key corresponding to a private key held by its current owner, signed by the previous owner, along with a chain of previous such titles. Title names may, quote, completely describe the property, for example, allocations in a namespace. Of course, names always refer to something, the semantics, so such a description is not really complete. Or the title names might simply be labels referring to the property. Various descriptions and rules, maps, deeds, and so on may be included. The property club can be thought of as a micro-government, an entity that performs globally and independently one narrow function normally associated with government. In particular, it is a, quote, constitutional micro-democracy with low entry and exit costs. After the rules of property transfer have been decided, each vote should stay within this constitution, so that normally the vote will simply implement a distributed operation according to the property rules. The voting is necessary not due to a democratic political ideology, but because it is the optimal result in analysis of distributed databases with malicious attackers. If the rules are violated by the winning voters, the correct losers can exit the group and reform a new group, inheriting the old titles. Users of the titles, relying parties, who wish to maintain correct titles, can securely verify for themselves which splinter group has correctly followed the rules and switch to the correct group. If the rules are violated by losing voters, they can be excluded from further participation both by correct winners and rule-following relying parties. This voting or reformation method works well where exit costs are low. Thus, in practice, users should not, quote, put all their eggs in one basket. But different title clubs should be used for different kinds of property. Note that the key security feature of the club is not the voting, but a set of objective, often automated rules and an unforgeable audit trail that allows both club members and relying parties to check whether each vote followed the rules. So to go further with the political metaphor, a property club is a constitutional micro-democracy with most of the emphasis on the constitutional. The voting is necessary, but is quite regulated. To implement a property club, we set up a replicated database so that the club members, hereafter, quote, servers, can securely maintain titles of ownership and securely transfer them upon the request of current owners. Actually getting end users to respect the property rights agreed upon by this system will be dependent on the specific nature of the property, and is beyond the scope of the current inquiry. The purpose of the replicated database is simply to securely agree on who owns what. The entire database is public. The ideal title database would have the following properties. 1. Current owner Alice should be able to transfer her title to only a single relying counterparty, similar to the, quote, double spending problem in digital cash. 2. Servers should not be able to forge transfers. 3. Servers should not be able to block transfers to or from politically incorrect parties. We cannot achieve ideals 1 and 3, so we introduce voting as follows. A good model of secure replicated database is the Byzantine quorum system of Malki and Ryder. In contrast to most recent work in peer-to-peer software, our design is based on mathematical proofs of security rather than hand-waving. For a short discussion of such threshold of servers approaches, see my essay Coalition Design for Secure Protocols. The database is replicated across a universe of servers. Capital U, and he's meaning here in the mathematical term of just U as a subset, and then comma, the absolute value of that subset equals N. The quorum system is a collection of subsets, or quora, of these servers, each pair of which intersect. Each quorum can operate on behalf of the system. Intersection guarantees that operations done on distinct quora preserve consistency. A quorum system tolerant of Byzantine, unconditionally malicious server failures is a collection of subsets of servers, each pair of which intersect in a set containing sufficiently many correct servers to guarantee the consistency of the replicated data. The authors construct a protocol such that any intersection contains at least two F plus one servers, thus providing resilience against up to F malicious servers. N is greater than 4F. Using these results, it looks like we can approach our ideal title database as follows. 1. Alice signs the title and Bob's public key and sends this message to 2F plus 1 servers, committing to her transfer of the title to Bob. Bob checks at least 2F plus 1 servers before relying on Alice's transfer. 2. No collusion of servers can forge Alice's signature. We achieve at least this property ideally. 3. A conspiracy of greater than or equal to 1/4 N servers can block a transfer. Alice's only recourse is to use some other channels to broadcast her intention, demonstrating that the registry did not follow her wishes, and hoping the alternative channels are more reliable. Bob only has similar recourse if he signed a document with Alice demonstrating their intentions to transfer title from Alice to Bob. The most basic recourse is a correct subset of servers which exits the property club and establishes a new one, then advertises its correctness and proves the incorrectness of its rival group as described above. I know math does not come across in audio very well, so that might have been kind of confusing, but don't worry, he's just talking about the level of Byzantine fault tolerance you could expect in a servers, essentially anonymous servers agreeing on a public registry, but this is exactly the kind of problem that was solved by the Bitcoin system in an actually much better way, you know, 10 years, 9 or 11 years after this. So much so that this really isn't applicable anymore, the fault tolerance of Bitcoin is on a whole different paradigm. So the continued work of Szabo, Wei Dai, Adam Back, Satoshi, you know, all these other people over the next decade essentially used a combination of many things, proof of work and so on and so forth, to figure out how to reach consensus in an uncensorable, decentralized way. Sharing control over property, for example, as security for a loan, could be accomplished by sharing the private key corresponding to the current owner's public key. Possession of this private key is required to sign over title. Multi-party threshold signatures could also be handled. So it may be a good idea to use one key pair for each combination of title and current owner, rather than key pairs representing the identities of owners. When certain contractual conditions are met, such as the last payment on a loan, this could trigger the generation of a new key pair held solely by the owner and transfer of title from the shared key pair to the new key pair. Divisibility and homesteading. The initial allocations might occur by mapping existing property rights from their current institutional incarnation, or by using traditional methods of staking and negotiating mutual recognition of claims. Some methods less dependent on an existing legal regime for the rights will be discussed in this section. For some kinds of allocation, such as spatial regions or a hierarchical namespace, we wish to be able to subdivide and re-merge properties. Current owner Alice should be able to transfer various fractional portions of her title to multiple single relying counterparties. One possibility is to have a, quote, divide or merge messages, whereby the current owner of a property can retire the old property specifications and link them to new property specs, the whole message being signed by the owner. Then the new property specs are introduced and considered active, and the old ones considered deactivated. It would be the responsibility of subsequent transferees to ensure that the new specifications do not intersect and are otherwise in good order. One way to approach the homesteading or initial allocation problem I call the emergent respect style. Alice claims the entire unallocated universe. Bob also claims it, the same property spec under a different digital signature. They then may choose to subdivide, sell, give away, etc. property. each conflicting root grows like a tree into an allocation of all property. How to resolve trees with conflicting roots? Eventually, the thugs, mechanisms, or informal agreements which enforce property rights converge on a particular tree as the standard proper allocation. Roots who give away more property to more people, or who actually deploy mechanisms to protect their property, will gain more respect for the tree they started. In a namespace, conflicts may be resolved by giving names to the conflicting roots and keeping track of those name subtree mappings as property. Usurpers may be able to steal property by setting up their own root and enforcing it, but they can't delete the alternative allocations. The history is always there as evidence for claims. Those with no first-hand knowledge of conflicting claims may resolve them by consulting authorities and weighing the opinions of these authorities according to trust metrics, similar to trust metrics sometimes used for public key certificates. With secure timestamps, homesteading could be done on a first-come rather than emergent respect basis. Adverse possession. For some kinds of property, we might want to add the right of adverse possession, or formalized squatting. Here's one general way to implement a kind of adverse possession. 1. Transfers must be securely timestamped. 2. Transfers expire. To maintain ownership, the owner must issue a new transfer to self before expiration. 3. Upon expiration, the property may be homesteaded on a first-come or emergent respect basis. This method doesn't attempt to define or utilize a state of, quote, disuse. Instead, it equates activity of the property with the ongoing, active online presence of an owner who knows about the title and wishes to continue ownership. Cost of maintaining the title might be made high by requiring a periodic registry fee from owners. However, this introduces the problem of who obtains the benefit, by property club rules, of the profits from this fee, and the problem of that the fee lowers the profit of owning the property, even perhaps making it negative. One possibility, where costs of protecting the property are high, is to charge a Georgian tax, based on some imprecise but objective estimate of the value potential of the property, and allocate the fees to the task of securing the property. To come up with this estimate, or to account for usage of the property itself, would involve mechanisms or observation of characteristics specific to the kind of property, to which subject we now turn. Correspondence to ground. Largely unaddressed above is the problem of divergence between actual conditions and directory rights. For example, squatters might legitimately, in the eyes of most property rights enforcers, occupy and improve unused land, which a title registry indicates is owned by others. DeSoto describes squatters and emergent property rights on the American frontier and today's developing world. When names are property, a name may violate a pre-existing trademark, causing the confusion that both the new namespace and the old trademark namespace were designed to solve. When divergence becomes too great, a solution to address the unreality of the title registry is needed. One such solution is for the squatters to set up their own rival registry, and then prove the superior correspondence of their registry to actual reality over control and use of the resources. Another solution for squatters is to use the adverse possession mechanism described above, but this works only if the cost of maintaining the title is sufficiently high. Another solution is to examine the incentives of the titled owner to see if they correspond to truthfully claiming control over a resource. In most cases, there may be incentive to lie, and we can't use this method. In some cases, there is incentive to tell the truth, and we can, with caveats, rely on it. Any such incentive assumption in the property rules should be explicated so that relying parties can examine whether the conditions creating the incentive still hold. Another solution is for property club rules and the registry to originally incorporate rich information about the actual state of the property and modify the actual ownership and transfer on this property based on that state in a way that leaves few ambiguities so that it can be fully audited by club members and third parties. It is most advantageous when this auditing can remain automated, as envisioned above, However, the introduction as rule criteria of unrecorded or unsecurely recorded transient states, common in physical property, causes auditing, and thus the titles, to become both less secure and more expensive. Many thanks to Gregory Birch, Eileen O'Connor, Melora Svoboda, and many others for the helpful comments. So he's got a number of references and links all throughout, speckled all throughout this thing. And a number of them I'm kind of looking, I've been scrolling through. Zuko is the writer of the Decentralized, Secure, Human, Meaningful, Choose To, in reference to names. And I think this really does a good job of hitting kind of the overall concept and a lot of the issues underlying digital property, like coming to terms with conflicts between the digital world and the physical world. And I think it also really demonstrates or clarifies the reality of what Bitcoin is at its core. This is a set of indisputable property rights and contracts that have found their first application as money. And Peter Weller, if you have not listened to, he had a recent talk, it's about an hour long, about Schnorr, Taproot, Mast, and a bunch of other different things that are coming to Bitcoin. And he actually talks about a concept that I hit in one of my own articles. I can't remember which one. I think it's in Bitcoin is Valued for Fast and Cheap Payments. Let me look it up here. Okay, no, it looks like it's in, okay, it's in Seven Misunderstandings of Bitcoin's Scaling Problem. What episode is this? Let me click. Okay, this is episode 38. So if you'd like to listen to that one or actually read the article, but a little bit down into the article, I talk about how Bitcoin, it makes a whole lot more sense to think of Bitcoin as a decentralized court, as an arbiter for any kind of financial or property agreement. And that's exactly what Peter Weller describes in the recent video I just mentioned. And I'll put that in the show notes and the post, because it's really good if you like listening. Yeah, Peter Weller is kind of soft-spoken and usually talks pretty technical, but it's really, really good if you like that stuff as much as I do. And he talks about, like, you know, this is a globally distributed stateless digital court, essentially, and everything's secured by cryptographic contracts. So because of that, we don't need every disagreement or minor issue to end up in the court. I mean, just like in real life, you know, like, you don't, every time there's a dispute over a receipt or, you know, some payment, you don't send the payment to be signed by a judge. You can establish enough proof between you and the other party that if it ever went to court, it would be practically guaranteed what the court would actually say in the situation of a dispute. So the vast majority of disputes or some minor issue or contested transaction is almost invariably dealt with outside of court. Mostly because the cost of going to court is unnecessary when we already know what the court is going to say, or at least in most cases. And that's that's the concept behind things like the Lightning Network and off-chain payment mechanisms or smart contracts that are dealt with off-chain and just hashed or connected to signatures on-chain, is that as long as me and the other party agree and we are holding a contract that we could take to the judge, in this case, the Bitcoin network, as long as we're holding that contract, then there's no reason for anybody to go out of their way to dispute or claim, you know, fraud in the case where it's clear what the contract says, because as soon as we go to the judge, they're going to lose everything that they had. So just settle outside of court. That's why something like the Lightning Network is actually secure, because it creates a smart contract with a set of insurance policies and backup mechanisms and time locks for a period of dispute that says, this is what the judge is going to say, so if you don't settle now, you're just going to wait 4 days and get screwed anyway. So while I thought this article or this essay here was really good in that regard, in the fact that it addresses, you know, if we had a digital representation of physical property, you know, how might we deal with squatters or people not realizing that they even own the property? How do we deal with a contestation between the physical world and the state of the property and the updated details of it on the digital registry, so on and so forth? And it's just a lot of things that should be kept in mind as these problems are trying to be worked out. I know there are individual blockchains that are trying to do this, like Factum, and I know there's a number of other projects that are doing it. I don't really keep up with it very well in regards to altcoins specifically. But this is a problem that will need to get solved eventually, and I think it will be another series of baby steps where, you know, we solve the problem of financial contracts and derivatives first, and then we start stepping our way to real property, and then even smart property where, you know, maybe the keys have to do with actually getting into and out of the home, to give some degree, even though that's no guarantee of physical ownership of a thing, as you can always kick the door in. It really does address a lot of the key factors that go into building a system like that. And it will be really interesting to see how those apply now that Bitcoin has solved essentially the Byzantine Generals problem and the problem of, with proof of work, figured out how to reach consensus and at the same time avoid the ability to censor transactions. Because in the scenario he gave was that 25% of the subset of servers could essentially block a transaction, whereas even in Bitcoin, something as much as 90% would not be able to block a transaction without an enormous cost to reverse transactions from the 10% of the miners who don't care. So 10% of the hash power, if they don't know that they're supposed to be censoring Alice and Bob's property title transfer, and this is done on the actual Bitcoin blockchain or through a contract that's tied to it, it means that one out of every 10 blocks is likely to include their transfer. And the only way the 90% can continue to censor it is if they redo that block one out of every 10 times it shows up. Or excuse me, every time it shows up, which is at one out of every 10 blocks, roughly. So eventually, if this was continued to be broadcast and included by the 10% who was unconcerned with censoring it, and as many miners and nodes and stuff are anonymous, it doesn't even really matter who they are, is eventually anybody in that 90% who's trying to censor it is going to just drop out of the group and be like, all right, I don't care anymore. Like, this is costing a ton of money every time we produce one of these blocks, and then have to redo that work instead of just moving forward with the chain. So it means even a small percentage of miners either not wanting to censor or not caring about censoring a transaction, it really makes it, turns the entire thing on its head versus the system that he was talking about back in 1998. It'll be really interesting to see how those caveats and murky areas between the real world reality of things and the digital registry that denotes that there is some certain reality, like how conflicts between those two worlds are dealt with. And I don't think it's in the too distant future that we see some serious contenders for solutions to this problem emerge. And I think it will be really, really exciting to see the idea of guaranteeing or at least producing a contestable registry to government public records regarding who owns what. Because as he noted in the beginning, towards the beginning of that article, that it's a huge problem, and it really is, particularly in unstable political environments, is just, you just delete, destroy, and forge documents, and suddenly, you know, people in government just own all this property that was somebody else's. And how do you even, like, they are the owners of the public records. How do you even contest what they're doing? It's a huge problem in Honduras specifically. That's why they partnered with Factum. I don't know how how all that stuff is actually moving forward, but I know there's a lot of people working on that problem specifically, and addressing all of those issues will be really critical and really fun to see how it plays out, where it fails and what needs to be worked out and solved or updated and all that good stuff. So because I want to hit this topic in the future, and I know in the next year, couple of years, we're going to see a lot of development in that space, I thought this was a really good thing to kind of kick off that discussion so that we can keep referring back to it. And I'll be sure to link this episode to kind of give us a foundation to where to start from when we hit this topic again in the future. All right. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Do not forget, this one was on NakamotoInstitute.org. You ever want to, you know, dig into some history of this stuff or read some really, really great content and explorations of a lot of these concepts, that is one of the greatest places to find just a huge pool of information on it. And I'm looking at doing some longer form audio of some of these things because they've been around for a long time. And there's some really, really good, like 50-page papers and stuff on some of these things. So maybe we'll explore that down the road. And in the meantime, if you want to check it out, that's NakamotoInstitute.org. And of course, follow Nick Szabo and check out all of his work. If you're not following him on crypto Twitter, then you're not really a part of crypto Twitter, because he is one of the top people in the entire space, and top thinkers from, as you can see, 30 years in the running. He's been a major voice for the entire concept. So, all right, with that, do not forget to follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy and Medium as well, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. That's The Crypto Economy Podcast with the headphones and the Bitcoin mug. Particularly if you would like to hear about all the cool stuff happening, the technology, the philosophy, the history, and the cypherpunks, everybody and everything going on that built and is building the crypto economy. And share it with all your friends who love this stuff as much as we do. And don't forget, you can support the show. I got another little donation the other day. Boom, boom. Love it, guys. Thank you. I'll have my Bitcoin donation address available in the Twitter post and in the show notes. And I'm adding a couple more affiliate links soon for some services that I use religiously. That'll give you more ways to, at no cost to you, help support the show. When I do that, I will update you here. But right now, the Best Hardware Wallet has an affiliate link for me. So if you're interested in getting a Trezor hardware wallet to secure your Bitcoin or any of your cryptocurrency and you have not done it yet, be sure to use my affiliate link so that you can get your Trezor. And at no cost to you, you will be throwing a couple bucks my way to help out the show and keep this thing running. Keep listening, guys. I got some really fun stuff and some interviews and other work in the schedule now. And I think we're going to have a couple really fun weeks here. So stick with me, and I will catch you all tomorrow. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.